The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And with the collapse of a former superpower,
several powerful factions now vying for control.
The threat is real. An evil organization calling itself SCAR.
Known only as SCAR.
Their goal?
Nothing short of total world domination.
Led by this man.
Known only as Iron Claw.
We will be victorious!
Not on my watch!
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, doing more G.I. Joe Extreme. This is episode 7 of G.I. Joe Extreme, Dawn's Oily Light, a name I still don't quite understand in now that we're done. Maybe
what?
I'm sure somebody else on the team gets it.
It's a play on Dawn's Early Light.
No, I get that, but who's Dawn?
Oh, my God.
This is Knowing Is Half the Podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
No.
What do you mean, no?
Yeah. No.
I promise I am.
You, no. You, Chance hit his limit.
Well, we came in real low energy because we were talking just before about just like life and like things that, you know, just like stuff. Like, man, life's kind of tough right now. Like, and so, like, yeah, we just came in and then you just drop what is Dawn? No, no, I'm just.
Chad, it was who is Dawn? I want to know who this person is.
Real close to over it already, and now I'm just.
At least we're not talking about children singing. I mean, can we agree on that? We at least have a nice episode of G.I. Joe to discuss today.
I suppose. Given
the choice of G.I. Joe Extreme's Dawn's Oily Light or Billy Biggle, let me tell you which side of the fence I would like to land on.
Look, it was real sad because for a while there, one of our favorite, one of the show's favorite people was Channing Sherman. Mm-hmm. Then we ended up doing that Kid Songs. And then,
oh boy.
Whew, boy, he got knocked down a peg or three.
You want to talk about losing heat in the locker room?
No. I think he went up in my book. He suggested something hilariously terrible, and I appreciate that. And it tortured both of you more than it did me. So he went up in my book.
Gina, you saw yourself in all the children on that show. Am I mistaken?
I mean, not Mark. Fuck Mark.
No, fuck Mark.
He's a lazy little asshole. I feel like, you know, just a peek behind the curtain. We were both, Ray and I are both currently looking for jobs, and this should come as a surprise to no one, but we have very different strategies for looking for jobs. Some might say, you know, based on gender and how hard one needs to grind in this world.
Oh, wow.
But, here it comes. I don't know.
She's
about to call you a Mark. She's about to call you Ray. multiple levels, a Mark.
That is exactly what happened. You're right. On multiple levels, I'm a Mark in this situation.
I wasn't. No, here's,
excellent
here's
use
the
of
thing.
The vernacular.
Even Ray isn't a Mark because fuck Mark. Mark's terrible. But it does directly tie into how hard we're grinding for that job. And Mark isn't grinding, and Mark will never grind. And Mark is currently working for his dad's company. And by that, I mean he's taking the boat out during the week, and everyone is like, has Mark even bothered to come in to work for the past month, or are we just pretending he's not collecting a paycheck for being the boss's son? And everyone's just like, it's just reality, man. You just gotta accept that Mark is a lazy asshole. Remember when he was a kid and he would rather practice magic than do his actual job, and then a bunch of little girls had to pick up his slack? So fuck Mark.
No, that's fair. Fuck Mark. Yeah. No. We're all on the same here. But today, we've gotten over Kid Songs, allegedly. Apparently not, quite frankly. But we are going to be talking about G.I. Joe Extreme. Now, how about this live action section? This is maybe the most involved live action intro we've had yet, involving almost every single member of the G.I. Joe team.
Yeah, I will say that this, now I get why they were scrimping. on those previous episodes because they blew their whole budget on this one. They got all the actors. They mocked up like a fake tank for one of them to lift. This is where all the money went.
Well, obviously, you know, that wasn't a real tank. I mean, it was very well done CGI, I will tell you. I think computers got involved somewhere.
You mean that man didn't single-handedly lift up a real tank?
You know what, Gina? I'm wrong. He did lift the tank. I don't mean to ruin Christmas for you.
I mean, look, we saw that one documentary where an individual punched a few places on a tank and it fell apart.
Yeah, Storm Shadow in the documentary, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero.
Yeah. So if someone can punch a tank and make it just immediately fall to bits, I assume someone can easily lift a tank.
I'm all about this. And look, he's a very strong man. I don't remember what his name is.
Me neither.
Freight. His name is Freight. I did write it down. Okay. So there you go. He lifted the So the whole game here is that one of the characters, Harpoon, makes a bet with all of the other Joes. This is all live action. That Freight can lift this tank, and losers have to pay him money, or he'll, you know, whatever. So he does it. He wins the money, and then changes the bet afterwards and says, "Oh, by the way, now you guys also have to come hang out with me on a fishing boat." Which, that's not cool, man.
No, he didn't change it. He said the deal was if Freight can't lift the tank, you get the moolah. If he can, then you all join me in the Gulf of Mexico.
But also he gets the moolah. So there's like extra stipulations. Where was the extra thing that he would have to do for them if Freight couldn't lift the tank?
Look, this doesn't seem like a very good bet.
They agreed.
The Jews, they're not good negotiators.
They're not.
Exactly. He shouldn't be. That shouldn't be held against him.
Yeah, look, don't blame him.
You go into a Vegas sports book and you want to bet on the Chicago Bears to win on Sunday, right? And, you know, the spread will say is 3.5 points. You don't go in there and say, I'd like to put $100 on the Chicago Bears. And the guy at the casino says, okay, so you win $100 if the Bears win by this amount. But if they lose by this amount, you lose the $100 and you have to come paint my house. It's like, wait a minute, casino. What are we talking about right now?
No, all it means is that one group of people here were smart and the other group of people were not. But they agreed. They could have countered, but they agreed.
They agreed. They just didn't think it was possible. So they just got suckered is what you're saying.
I think they were overly confident in their bet. They were like, yeah, fuck it. Yeah, you want us to take your trash out for a month? We'll do that, dummy. Yeah, you want us to make you nachos every Tuesday night for the next month? Sure, we'll do that. You want us to make you lasagnas on Wednesday? Ham sandwiches on Thursday? I haven't eaten today. I'm very hungry.
I was going to say, Gina's very hungry right now, and it is obvious. It is obvious.
I have had a busy morning and I have not had time to eat yet. But yeah, they made a stupid bet because they were overly confident. I feel like there's some sort of life lesson here that they will never learn.
I like it. So that's our cold open. That is our live action intro. And it was kind of like, it was very involved and involved actual characters and these actors playing these characters. Actually talking, and I think it was dubbed over with just the animated voice dudes. I think that was pretty obvious, but I'm also really dumb, so maybe it wasn't.
I don't think that we can put it on the Joes there, because it's absurd to think that a human being could lift a tank.
Yes, it is. These are all superheroes, though.
And I thought that at some point, there'd be a reveal that, like, you know, he secretly put like a little jack underneath it and so it lifted up kind of thing. There was a reveal later on in the episode, but it was that he put, like, I don't know, was it a sandwich or jambalaya or something mildly racist underneath the tank so that he would lift it.
It was a sandwich, I believe. Yeah.
And so, like, ugh, that's not great. I don't.
Oh, wait. Oh, so they were saying so he would be more motivated?
Yes.
Right. He would want to get the sandwich under the tank.
If you were going to put a lasagna under a tank right now, I would fucking lift that tank.
She is so goddamn hungry right now. Somebody get Gina a goddamn sandwich.
I would lift it. If there was a sandwich under a tank, I'd lift it.
All right, so I put a dish of blackened catfish under the tank. Fred will do anything for Cajun.
Blackened catfish.
I don't know if that's racist. Is the guy he's He Here's just, the it's, deal. It's a food preference he has.
It's a food preference he has. They are just outside of New Orleans.
Yeah.
So I think that, Chan, I know I'm the white guy on the show, but I think this is okay.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like, it's a food that he likes that he's talking about. The guy probably All right. does like blackened catfish.
I'll put this down to a regional preference and not because it's not like he said watermelon or fried chicken.
That would have been very different.
There's not like a strong racial association here, even though like, I mean, it was, you know, largely black culture that created Cajun food. So like,
But again, if it is a food that he likes,
you like what you like, Chan. I don't know what to tell you. Some food is delicious.
I used lasagna as an example.
Oh, yes, you
did. What a racist Italian you are, Gina Ippolito.
I mean, she really is, and I can't. I mean, I can't say anything about it because it's not my place.
Oh man, I hope there isn't a parsnip and box of macaroni and cheese from Kraft under there.
Oh,
I'd lift the tank too.
Oh God, a parsnip. I mean, here's the thing. I will say if that dude didn't like blackened catfish and they were just like assuming, then that would be racist. Like if someone was like, hey, let's put a fucking lasagna under this tank. Gina will do anything for lasagna. And I'm like, I'm actually allergic to fucking noodles, you fucking Italian racist. Then that would be a whole other story. But it seems like he really does like blackened catfish.
It's a hard act to do, Gina, because anybody who's talked to you for more than a second and a half knows how much you like food. So
yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
find somebody who doesn't know Gina likes food, you know.
I mean, to be fair, you could put like a half eaten like veggie sandwich under there and I'd be like, yeah, free food. I'm lifting it.
I mean, all this tracks. I've been there. It all holds up.
I've seen it.
So we had our theme song again. We've heard the theme song a few times now. I did have a question that didn't really hit me. They talk about that there are the major superpower went down, whether it be Cobra or Russia or whatever you believe. But then they said there's other factions vying for control. But near as I can tell, it's just the Iron Claw. So is the Iron Claw already brought all those factions under one umbrella? Or are there other factions besides him that we just haven't met and maybe we'll never meet?
What's going on with that? I feel like even within Iron Claw, there are other factions. Like what's the Dr. Jekyll guy?
Rampage.
Rampage is like always trying to get in there.
But I mean, that's like saying that Starscream is his own faction.
Right.
Like, he's a Decepticon. He just, you know, is looking out for number one.
But I also assume that like we've only seen a few countries. Like, I think that there's probably a version of Claw in.
Oh, okay.
In different places.
Well, then how come G.I. Joe isn't dealing with them? You know,
well, because it's like the Red Guard. What were they called?
The October Guard. That's pretty close. I'll be honest. I don't even feel, I won't even make fun of you for that. That's pretty good.
I mean, like there are probably other places because this G.I. Joe team is very much like a ragtag team. So I assume there are other terrorist organizations and other sort of good guy organizations.
Interesting.
Taking those down.
Maybe we'll meet them.
Yeah, maybe we will.
Interesting. Okay.
You see, Gina said it like, yeah, maybe we will, motherfucker. What do you think?
We also know Gina went back in time to write G.I. Joe Extreme.
You guys don't know this. So I take it very personally when you're you know, when you're shit talking.
Gina's a time machine pen name is Roger Slifer. So you need to know this. She was very prolific.
It's really hard too, because as you guys know, I'm not great with names. So I created this name of Roger Slifer. And then people were like, who wrote this? And I'm like, Robert Slapper?
Smigel?
Robert Smigel. And that's how, yeah, she's very prolific, I'll say. There's about five different writers with similar names. That she did. So we get to the show itself. Now we have an underwater oil platform. And we have an interesting conversation between Iron Claw and Rampage. And Rampage is decked out in different kind of clothes. He's wearing kind of a really cool, how would you describe this? It's like a tactical suit of some kind, right? Like a futuristic
it's
tactical
suit. It's his fishing outfit.
It's his fishing outfit.
Yeah, that's a fishing vest.
I'm talking about Rampage, the villain wearing the cool cybernetic tactical suit.
He could still, he knows he's going out on the water. He could still be dressed for fishing.
I don't recall that.
I also don't recall.
Oh dear Lord. Okay. So there's, it's really, really cool. Rampage is normally dressed a certain way. Here he's dressed for the operation, which I thought was just a cool touch that it showed that the people making this actually cared about what they were doing. And it made me happy. So, Rampage is there to destroy the underwater oil platforms and the drilling areas, so that way the price of oil goes up. Iron Claw can hoard the oil he has, I guess, and then he can get high on prices.
Mm-hmm.
That seems all right. But Rampage is also a mercenary who said, while I'm here, why don't I destroy the platform but steal all the oil when I'm here so I can get in on all this? Now, what Rampage doesn't seem to understand is, if he steals the oil and it isn't destroyed, and he just takes it to the black market, the price of oil will not change.
Yeah.
Also, isn't this like the second time in a row that he's been like, oh, fuck, he's getting, fuck Claw's
plan. He's getting feistier. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I like that. He is basically, he is bored in this job, and he wants a promotion big time. And if he's not getting that promotion, he's going to poach all of Claw's clients.
Yep.
And go elsewhere.
Yeah, and I really like this character. I like the fact that there are some nuance to him, in that he felt himself rampaging out, and he had to calm himself down because he didn't want to break the fancy suit that he was wearing. And I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was neat. Don't destroy the merchandise.
I will say, once again, with this episode, I felt it very keenly. The bones are there.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these characters are acting with, like, real rational motivations. You know, like Rampage is like trying to figure out how he can, you know, make that money, and, you know, his boss is being a real prick. And so, like, he's, you know, really trying to play both sides. And so it makes sense that he, like, stays longer than he should, is doing things that he shouldn't, which gives G.I. Joe the in. So, you know, it's not it doesn't feel like he's just a slave to the plot and doing things. And then when it all falls apart, it's, you know, like, okay, that makes sense. I'm buying this. But so much of this is, just like all of the dialogue and all of the music. And we'll get to the part where there's a montage that,
I love it. We get another one
that, like, stylistically makes sense, but the execution of it is just like, obviously it's for a 11-year-old boy in 1990, and
five,
it's just
six,
like,
in there,
it's just drilled into that demo, and as soon as you step an inch outside, you're like, the fuck is this? Oh my god.
Yeah, that was very noticeable. But I actually, to what the point what you just said, Gina, was
if I do it on purpose,
it's not as funny.
I had a real Muttley dog vibe, that dog that, like, laughs.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find my niche.
Is it the Laugh Olympics? Is it?
Yeah, the Laugh. Well, it was the Wacky Races.
Oh,
But Snidely Whiplash and Muttley.
Muttley. That is correct. Yeah. My point is, I made that same point that if this was done in the Deke era, which I always go back to, unfortunately, but he would just have no reason to do this. He'd just be like, I just am doing this still. But here, you could see they set up earlier in the episode that he was trying to find an angle to make more money. He decides that he's going to wait for the freighter or whatever to arrive, the tanker to arrive, so he could rob it. And then when he finally gets that, even though the storm is coming in, he waits longer. We'll get all that, I suppose. But, like, he does all these things which are not in his own best interest, but it's because of his own greed and hubris. And, Chan, to what you said, I agree with you. I even made that same note. Like, I'm so happy this sequence of events is justified in the story and characterization. G.I. Joe Extreme getting it done. Who knew?
I mean, ish. Like I said, the bones are there.
Well, IMDb rates G.I. Joe Extreme something like a 5. It's in the 5 somewhere, and I feel like that's not even close.
This out of 10?
Out of 10. Out of 10, yeah. I'm feeling like these should be 7s and 8s, like 7.8. I would give this series a 7.8 in that zone right now if we were rating it on a scale of 1 to 10. I think obviously there are flaws. It's not perfect, but it is pretty good. I mean, I would definitely call it a B-, you know, level, you know.
Yeah, I agree with B-.
I mean, here's the thing. If someone were to ask me, should I watch this? I would absolutely say no. if somebody were like, hey, I have to watch this for work, how bad is it going to be? I'll be like, not the worst. You're going to be okay.
But fair.
Yeah, I agree with B minus because like nobody wants a B minus.
I love a B minus. Oh man, I was shooting for B minus.
I would take a B minus every time. Like, oh, cringe. Hardcore.
C is bad. Anything looking like a C there, that's not going to pass in an Asian household. Even though my mom was pretty lax as far as tiger moms go, as long as I was in the B's, we're cool. Ugh. And I can skate by with a B. I can do no work and get a B minus. So, that's where I live.
I mistakenly thought no one's actually like shooting for a B minus. But if you get a B minus, you're sort of just like, oh, all right. And that's kind of how I feel about this.
Yeah. And you know what? If they were shooting for a B minus, good job. You hit it.
There you go.
Yeah. Again, I don't know why anyone would shoot for a B minus, but yeah.
Because sometimes you got to pay that mortgage and and getting an A is going to be real, real hard. But
you can get three B minuses for the same effort it would take you to get an A over there.
Here's the thing.
You could, like, at least for me, depending on the class, I could do no work and get a B. I could do minimal work and get a B plus.
Listen to Braggy Pants over here.
I
could do no work and I could get a D. I could do lots of work and I could get a C.
I'm very much saying depending on the work because like math and science. Yeah, I agree. If you're not whatever, like memorizing science words or shit and you're doing no work, then yeah, you're probably going to get a C if you don't do any work. But if it's like English or something and I'm not reading the book, I could still get a B.
I'm curious about something, and Gina, feel free not to tell me, but what was your GPA in high school?
GPA. When I graduated, it was a solid B+. It was like a 3.7.
3.7. That's pretty good.
Is it? Because in hindsight, I was extraordinarily lazy.
Getting 3.7 is pretty good. I graduated high school with a 2.65.
All right.
I was actually extraordinarily lazy.
We are never again going to debate who's right. 2.6 is like an after school special level of bad.
What it is it's doing the bare minimum physically possible to get through it.
Oh God. Here's the thing. If being as lazy as I was in high school netted me a 2.6, I would have not ever been lazy again. That would have been too much for me. But I did the bare minimum and ended up with a 3.7.
I would argue if you got a 3.7, like, you weren't doing just the bare minimum, because I've just proven to you what the bare minimum looks like.
The bare minimum for you looks like that.
Oh my goodness.
The bare minimum for a smart person looks like a 3.7.
Chan, you want to enter this conversation?
Speaking as a 3.4, I feel testing real well means that you can slack off just a bit.
Yeah, I and in this conversation, I feel like Chan is probably the mama bear. What's the normal average bear? Is that the mama bear?
What? No. What?
You know, like in the Goldilocks story, it's like Goldilocks. This porridge is too hot. This porridge is too cold. This porridge is just right. This bed is too soft. This bed is too hard.
Right is the baby bear.
It's the baby bear.
It's the baby bear?
Oh my goodness.
So while you were slacking off in high school, might you have covered nursery rhymes?
Everyone knows that back then, like the Papa Bear is like coming in fucking hot and just like not like doing angry shit or doing jack shit. The baby bear is coming in with like a leaky butt. And then the mama bear is like, fine, I will fix this house.
Except no, the mama bear's was actually too cold, which means she was actually doing fuck all.
Oh, she didn't even heat the porridge. The thing. Now it makes sense because moms are always the ones that are like back then that were like serving the dinner. And
doing
so their
the work,
own dinner was cold by the time they got to it.
Mm-hmm. And her bed was too soft. I mean, come on, dude. Get it together, mama bear.
Yeah, so Chan is the baby bear in this situation, and I feel like he's actually probably right. I feel like that's probably, for most people, if they did the bare minimum, they would get a 3.4.
But here's the question, Chan, did you do the bare minimum, or were you trying?
Ooh, it really swung back and forth.
Okay.
I mean, you know, when you're in them gifted classes, you can kind of...
Yeah, I like gifted classes.
You gotta...
I was in them. I got C's.
It's not... That's not... It doesn't mean the same thing. Your mom called it gifted, Ray, but it meant something else. And
accelerated English is accelerated English everywhere, TV's Gina Ippolito.
Ooh, I feel like accelerated is not AP.
Yeah, I was in AP English. Tiers. But I evened it out with being in something called discrete math, which was math for kids who are dumb at math. And we pretty much just learned how to play bridge and then played bridge. And if you, by the end of the class, knew how to play bridge, they gave you an okay grade.
I would figure discrete math is actually teaching you like ounces and grams and everything, all the measurements you need for a certain other industries in this world.
I assumed it was for like teaching you how to blackmail people.
Interesting.
And like work the numbers and like how much, you know, can you squeeze out of this person based on how much money they make and their position, you know, like of their political power.
Be very discreet when you use this kind of math or the FBI will be on your ass.
I mean, you did go to school in Jersey, so I feel like that has
number
to be
one it. Public high school in New Jersey, baby.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm sorry, Gina. I'm sorry. You're not bougie. Who's pretending what anymore?
Yeah. I like
there
how
goes
you,
the mask.
You glossed over the public part of that high school.
Yeah, because you needed everybody to know how bougie you were. I know what public means. So we cut over to the G.I. Joe team.
Wait, well, we're not going to be talking about school systems anymore?
No. I think we're good.
Is this not my three dads?
I think we've already lost half the audience, so I think we're good. I think we're going to move on. We cut over to the boat, and this boat consists of who? It's got Black Dragon, it's got Harpoon, and it's got Heavy Metal, because those are the two guys who, I guess, apparently lost the bet to go on the boat. So Harpoon is out fishing, having a good time. Heavy Metal is manic as all get out, and Black Dragon is seasick and barfing the entire time.
Wait, which was the one that was like, I'll catch some sushi?
Harpoon said he would catch sushi.
Okay. Harpoon, he was the one that I liked. He was making the most of it.
Harpoon,
well, because it was his idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him.
This is his vacation. It's real weird that like just chilling in the Gulf of Mexico is like a horrible thing. For Black Dragon, he's like seasick and he hated it and was like, this is the worst ever. And Metalhead's like, I want to go back to New Orleans. And like,
I mean, this made sense though.
Well, I mean, sure, New Orleans is, you know, like a great place, but also like you're on a nice fishing boat in the middle of like one of the nicest bodies of water to relax in. And both of these guys are just being real pills about it.
Yeah,
Chan, that's
I agree.
Not relaxing. I would be Metalhead on this. Ugh, I mean, you got a whole city
worst.
Of adventure over there, and you're out here doing nothing on the water. I would rather be in the city having a good time finding stuff to do
you
than just
do
be
that.
Out doing nothing.
You can do that at any time. You could go out and
well,
do
I'd like
shit.
To be doing it now, Gina.
you I mean, if someone is like, I am gonna catch fish and then we're gonna eat that fish, I would be like, count me the fuck in.
Well, I'm not interested.
If I am getting fresh from the ocean sushi, I'm in.
I don't think I would want to eat a sushi fresh from the ocean.
What do you
if I could
think
be quite
sushi
honestly with you.
Is, Raymond?
I'm curious how.
Prepared, it's fish that's uh-huh. been prepared, and it's specific kinds of fish. You don't just rip any fish that you happen to catch out of the ocean, cut it open, and eat it raw. That seems like an easy way to get sick very quickly.
Chan, please explain.
Well, how come I gotta explain sushi?
Because I'm tired of explaining obvious things
Fair
to
enough.
Ray.
Fair enough. Man, when you're hungry, you gotta eat. I don't know.
Also,
I don't know what more needs to be said here.
Like, also, like, legitimately, I'm asking you this legitimately. Have you never gone camping and caught your own fish and eaten it?
Fuck no.
Oh, I don't think I have either.
You are missing out, sir.
I have been fishing one time. We threw all the fish back and did not take any with us. So as far as I know, all the fish I caught could have been the same one, just having fun with me over and over again.
So you would be, here's the thing. There is a scene in Lost where Jin, and at this point he still can't speak English because it's very early. He wants to figure out a way to contribute, and his dad was a fisherman, so he catches uni.
Absolutely.
And prepares it beautifully and offers it to, you know, the fucking white people and Jorge Garcia, who like poo-poo it and are like, fuck no. And uni is one of my favorite sushis and is also the like one of the more expensive ones. And if a dude is like, I just caught this uni and prepared it, I know what I'm doing, eat this uni, I would be like, give me that whole plate. Give me everyone's. So you would be one of those ignorant white people that makes him feel bad about himself for knowing what he's doing. Because this dude on the boat clearly knows what he's doing. He knows which kind of fish are sushi. And like, I don't know, like, clearly you've never been at a sushi place where they kill it in front of you.
No. My God. Whoa, that sounds up. Monstrous. What are you talking
They're
about?
Killing the fish right in front of you?
When I
like,
when,
slapping around and like, and
what
and
murder sushi
it,
Chan, are you going to?
You were in Japan, right, Chan?
Yeah. I went to, was it Tsukijima? Fish market. So yeah. I was there where like, a significant portion of the world's fish comes in.
Yeah.
I did not go into a restaurant where they pulled the fish out of the tank, smacked its
shrimp?
Head against the board until it died, and then like lopped its head off, gutted it, and
you
scaled
didn't,
it.
You
and,
didn't yeah, you didn't get shrimp anywhere?
Nope.
All right.
Are you saying that they pulled the shrimp right out of the tank and just like feed it to you squirming?
No, they, you know, like, I don't like to think about it because I feel bad for animals, but I did a chef's choice omakase at.
Did you do the octopus?
No, that I would not do.
Well, that's terrifying. That's terrifying.
That I would not do. I do not want to kill it, and I'm not going to eat something that's still alive, but he did take a live shrimp out of a thing and said, do you want it raw or do you want it cooked? And I did it raw. Then he, you know, he pulls its
Ooh, baby,
head
I
off
like
and
it
shit.
Raw.
Well, there's Ooh, somebody baby, else's
like
ringtone.
Raw.
Dear Lord.
Shimmy, shimmy,
but
ya.
It's, you know, it's.
Sushi, sushi, ya, sushi,
you
ya.
You want
sushi
your sushi fresh.
Give me the fish before I take it away. I'm really, I'm spitting bars here. What is happening? Why are you not acknowledging how great?
No,
I
no,
just
I'm walking,
find it hard
walking
to
away.
That, like, you've never gone someplace and picked out your own lobster or picked out oysters that are still alive, and then when they shuck them, that's when they die.
No, that sounds monstrous. I understand that the lobster thing is real. The shrimp thing makes sense to me, but you're not saying they like ripped out a giant like tuna and then killed it in front of you and then cut the tuna to make sushi.
No, but again, you've never gone fishing and like, what do you think is happening with fish? Do you think that they're like, they wait for it to die of old, they catch it, then wait for it to die of old age and then feed it to you?
No, I understand that these are living creatures that are killed and then prepared, much like cows and pigs and chickens. It all makes sense
except,
to me, Gina.
Except,
I just don't
chickens?
Know what sushi place.
Except
God
sushi needs to be extremely fresh. So it's all stuff that's been killed very recently, whereas like a cow could have been, you know. Again, I hate thinking of this stuff because I need to dissociate when I eat things
sure.
that were once living.
I get it.
But, like, you don't want sushi that has been killed several days ago.
Tell that to my local supermarket where I've seen the same sushi
no, I
in the rack for days.
Here's
you.
The thing. I guarantee you all of those places get at least one shipment of sushi fish a day.
Interesting.
That's
but it's
that's
still not
why
the fish is still not alive in the restaurant and you don't pick it out. I want to make sure this is on the record because that sounds really weird to me.
I mean, you have been into a Chinese restaurant where they have actual fish that they're actually
yes.
cooking in the tanks, right?
Wait a minute. What?
Oh, my God. Also, even if you just go to Whole Foods, if you've ever gotten oysters at Whole Foods.
No. Why would I ever have done that?
Because
I'm
you're
not,
a human
I'm not white
being?
Enough. I'm not white enough to go to Whole Foods and buy oysters. I'll say that right now. I'm turning in my card.
I don't think you deriding an entire Asian nation's way of making fish is considered not white. No. It sounds like the whitest thing in the world to me.
I love sushi. Sushi is one of my favorite things in the world. I am a huge fan of the product. What I would not trust is Harpoon catching a fish off the side of the boat from the ocean, cutting it up raw, and then serving it to me. I would want some sort of preparation from somebody I trust in that particular environment.
So if he was a sushi chef,
different fishing, story, isn't it?
No, I'm just saying, if you were fishing with a sushi chef and he fished and carved it up in front of you and gave you sushi,
I probably still wouldn't eat it. I'd still be grossed out by the fact that he carved it up in front of me.
Eating? I don't understand this.
Gina, it's dissociation, just like you said. I can eat a hamburger all day long, but if you make me watch the cow get killed, cut up with a chainsaw, and then turned into a hamburger patty in front of me, I'm not going to want to eat that product because I can no longer disassociate from it.
Sidebar. How long do you think we are away from steakhouses that will do exactly that?
Because
Like there's a a chunk of the population that's like, you know what? I would really like murder with my dinner.
Well, have you guys ever been to one of the places that gives you the whole background on the cow?
No, that's horrifying. No.
All right.
But they like treat them super nice. So they're not going to be like,
but they say like, this is where it was born. This is what it was fed. This like they give you a whole thing. And I mean, it's in fancy places. So I now know that you guys have never been to a fancy place.
I mean, I think that should have been obvious from the get go.
But that I can't deal with. I don't want to think of my food as ever having been alive. So here's the thing. If it's purely the watching a murder of an animal in front of you, then I get it. But you were saying like, you can't just get fish and cut it up and then eat it, which is
not
literally
if you're not
how
trained.
Sushi is.
If you don't know, if you're just some yokel and you don't know what kind of fish you're pulling, some fish are not good for you, and some fish require specific preparation.
So you're assuming that this guy who has clearly been fishing quite a lot and done this before doesn't know what he's doing?
Yeah, he just doesn't trust Harpoon is the thing.
I don't trust Harpoon is what I'm saying.
I think that's what it sounds like.
Definitely.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Nobody beats G.I.
The fox had better look out for the Cobra Stiletto.
Cobra Stiletto's giving Joe the chase, then blasting its way into outer space.
And on the Warthog is Sergeant Slaughter.
But nobody beats G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe Warthog. Over the water and in the bog, the Warthog bites like a rabid dog. But nobody beats G.I. Joe, the real American hero.
Stiletto comes with pilot, Desert Fox with driver, Warthog with Sergeant Slaughter.
Joe, Joe!
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
So, we move on to the fact that there's a tropical storm coming.
I'm sorry to everyone
and a half into this episode
who doesn't live on a coast and has no frame of reference for just like, oh yeah, I just go down to the sushi place and we got fresh sushi every day. There are people who live in this country who don't see fresh fish.
True.
And if they do see sushi, it's...
Fuck those people.
It's got a...
Whoa!
I feel like there's a
Trump
lot of...
country.
I feel like there are a lot of people who listen to the show that are bad.
Here's the thing. I consider Chan a more adventurous eater than I. So, Ray, I'm not surprised because my image of your everyday life is just you waking up, getting an entire loaf of Wonder Bread, and then spreading mayo on it, and then that being what you eat with a can of beer for every meal. That's what I picture your life. You get Wonder Bread with mayo and a PBR. Sometimes you dip that Wonder Bread with mayo into the PBR if you're feeling adventurous. But that's your daily diet.
It's like you're here with me in the room.
And then I'd be like, in this situation, I'm usually the baby bear where I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll try it. But I feel like Chan is the one that's like, yeah, I went to this fucking weird grocery store. I got this weird seasoning. I put it on, you know, some fucking whatever I found in my cabinet that's like a can of smoked oysters. And I'm trying to think of weird shit.
Wait, but, did you just say you're driving a weird jet?
No, I said I'm trying to think of weird shit. You know, like, I feel like Chan's like, hey, I bought a dory and I'm about to deep fry it with some shrimp chip breading.
You caught Dory from Finding Nemo and you're going to eat her? No.
So I am surprised that you, although like, I guess in hindsight, Chan's food is usually like on the cheaper side, adventurous, but cheap. So I don't know.
Look, I'm just going to put my bag of Wonder Bread away because you've made me feel seen in the wrong way.
Hold on. I need to go get a can of smoked oysters and shrimp chips and and cook them on a jet, I think was what was happening.
A weird
I
jet.
I was assuming you were, this is a very Top Chef challenge type of thing, but I assume you were bashing up the shrimp chips to make a breading for the smoked oysters.
No doubt.
And then frying them in your deep fryer, which now that I'm saying it out loud, sounds pretty good, although I hate smoked oysters. But I do feel like every time we talk to you, you're like, I wanted to make a cake, but I didn't have stuff to make cake. So I found these five ingredients in my cabinet and somehow made a cake.
If you have any idea how close to the truth you are,
yes,
and how much it infuriates my partner, your mind would be blown.
Oh, I would love that.
Not everybody does. I had some leftover polenta I mixed with the quail eggs that I just have lying around, and wouldn't you know it, chocolate cake.
Look, I've been to your house before, and you're like, I wanted to make strawberry donuts. I didn't have strawberries or donuts, but I did have strawberry pocky. So I mashed up the strawberry pocky until it was a strawberry powder, mm-hmm, and then I took some leftover croissant dough,
yep,
formed them into balls, rolled this them in brown out sugar and the pocky dust, and then put them in the deep fryer. You have said this before.
This all holds up.
I don't know if that's a thing you've ever made, but I feel like I'm coming close.
It's pretty close, yeah. It actually is.
Lordy Lou. Okay, so reason number two why I don't trust Harpoon. He claims to be this boatsman who's been wanting to get out on the ocean for 8 months, didn't bother to check to see if a tropical storm would be occurring that day.
That is
Harpoon,
very dumb. That's,
yeah,
do not trust you. Do not trust the man.
That is very dumb. I mean, it could be a white squall situation where it came out of nowhere. But yeah, that was my thought as well, which is like he didn't check his weather app.
I am curious because I will say that meteorological technology has advanced a lot in 20, 30 years. And it's possible that this is far back enough that hurricanes were kind of hard to predict. I don't think they were that bad that far that recently, but definitely there was a time where it was just like, oh, okay, there's a hurricane coming and we've got like 12 hours to clear out of here. So
I feel like by 95 we had it figured out though.
Might be.
I'm just saying. So it's Tropical Storm Roger, because we need that extra detail. I loved it. And then the oil rig then starts exploding, because that's Rampage blowing it up. Now, the coincidence involved in having these two groups of people doing what they're doing in the ocean within a very short
distance
to each other is a little rough.
I thought I missed a part at some point, because I was trying to watch it quickly. And
like we all do,
yeah. I get it.
I usually watch a minute and then go do something else, and then watch it. But I had a meeting today, and so I was running late. But I was convinced I missed something about why they were both there.
They're just there, which is interesting. We will then watch the boat. They decide, well, we got to go check that out, even though we should leave. So they go to check out the oil rig that's blowing up. And then the Iron Claw official Rampage submarine vehicle. It's a weird looking vehicle. It raises out of the water, lifting their boat up in the air. So that way they're stuck. And then they fight some robots right there. And G.I. Joe loses this fight. This is pretty crazy to me. All three Joes get defeated in this moment. Two of them are taken prisoner, and Harpoon jumps overboard and lands in the ocean. Good job, Rampage and his crew. Yeah. Fill in the competence. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that made me laugh was Harpoon lands, he's under the water. He doesn't want to go up again because he'll get shot. So he finds a very unfortunate tube and tries to breathe through the tube.
Yeah.
And
it's a metal pipe of some sort. He cuts it with a shell that he finds on the ground.
That was weird.
That's arguably more impressive than lifting a fucking tank.
You know what? You know what? Yeah. You know, I hadn't thought about that. You are correct. He cuts the tube open, uses it to breathe the oxygen, which seems like it's shooting out with jet engine propulsion. And he just slaps his mouth on there and he's just breathing away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a thing. That's a thing. Definitely doable.
One of the things Rampage bemoans is that I wish I'd captured all three of you because a complete set of Joes, which apparently they only come in threes. Yeah. Who knew? He said that's worth more on the open market than just two. I would think two is pretty good. He did mention I'm going to put you guys up for bidding between Iron Claw and G.I. Joe, and we'll see how much your friends really want you back, which I thought was kind of a cool illusion.
Yeah.
I thought that was appropriately evil.
Don't hate that.
Yeah. Harpoon ends up, he says, I could submerge, or I should go up right now, but instead I'm going to go submerge myself down using a chain to see what's going on down there. And that's where he sort of gets the idea like, oh, they're blowing out the oil thing and then they're going to try to steal the oil. And so he has a general idea of what's happening. Cool. Then he gets attacked by a shark. And then he's fine. He just is like, cut to commercial, a shark's about to kill me. And then cut back to, oh, the shark wasn't actually near him, and he just rides his tube back up to the surface.
I mean, at least he doesn't actually ride the shark.
We can be thankful of that.
He did jump it, though.
Yeah, he's swimming around, and of course there are sharks, because it's G.I. Joe, and we've got to have some sort of stakes. But no, they go chasing him, and he gets by them, but then he has to, like, balance on some stuff, and
all right,
and it's one of those things where, like, the line from him is
one more step like that and the sharks eat sheep.
That's not a bad line.
It's not like, bad.
What is he
one
say?
More step like that, you know, like, if he falls off, then the sharks eat sheep. It's a decent line of dialogue in the midst of just, like, all of this trash. You know, like, sharks, like, jumping out of the water with huge, you know, like, great white sharks, like, rah, and him beating him off with, I don't know, a shell, presumably. I wasn't paying real close attention, but it's just the bones are there.
I liked it, you know. So let's see here. He rides the tube up. The storm is now starting to approach. Iron Claw gets on his horn to Rampage. He's like, hey, dummy, I told you to destroy these things. Don't steal them. What are you doing? Like, you're gonna end up with nothing if you don't get out of there before the storm hits. And Rampage is like, bleep you, buddy. I'm going to steal what I want. You're not my dad. You can't stop me. And so Rampage wants to wait for the tanker to arrive to the oil rig so he can, like, steal the oil from there as well, because it's going to make him a lot of money. He's playing, like, a Price is Right game where you got to get close enough without going over. And he's dangerously close, but he's like, I'm just going to keep pushing it. One more tube of toothpaste, Drew Carey. Put it on there and let's see if I'm still not over, you know. And I appreciated that. Yes, I watched The Price is Right this morning. Okay, listen. It's fresh in my mind.
While you were eating your Wonder Bread and drinking your PBR, this sounds like what I think white people do.
Here's the thing. You better have watched Whose Line after it. Otherwise, you're a racist.
Whose Line?
Not Whose Line. I'm sorry. Let's Make a Deal.
Let's Make a Deal was before Price is Right, Chan. Don't be weird.
Oh, they go before now? It used to be after.
They've gone before for a long time. How long have you been before you watched?
It's been a while.
Okay. I would say it's the 9 a.m. is Wayne Brady and Let's Make a Deal. 10 a.m. is Drew Carey and The Price is Right. And don't ask me why I know that. So, well, I did watch it today. I guess you can ask me. That's fine. Moving forward. Harpoon has now snuck onto the base. Nothing too exciting about this. But he finds his way into some sort of supply room, and using supplies he finds around, makes his own jet-powered water cannon, which is, I guess, on brand, but it's a little weird.
No, it is. The thing is, I don't know what this is.
Right.
Because he says that it's water. It is green. It blows holes in things. It acts more like a laser or some sort of, like, plasma emitter.
Plasma laser.
I put a water laser ? Because, like, what is I have multiple notes in here. Like, what is that? What is that supposed to be?
It does many different things in this episode. That is for truth. Yes.
And yeah, I have some issue with that because I'm like, sure, make stuff up, but like when it has no grounding in any sort of physics whatsoever. Well, come on.
Let me lay this out a little bit, because the first time he tries to shoot the water cannon, he ends up using physics. He flies backwards like 50 feet.
Big old kickback. I thought was kind of neat. That's a thing.
He did, but he hit the robot with water, which then short circuited the robot. Immediately, I'm like, Rampage, this is an aquatic operation. Why are you bringing robots who can get melted by getting water on them to the ocean?
He bought him cheap from the Wicked Witch of the West, and that's on him.
Fair. Yeah, yeah. WWW shipping, I believe. So that was a little bit weird. That's a bad call on Rampage's part. But then he somehow adjusts the stream and starts cutting the robots in half like it's some sort of high-pressure saw.
Right.
Which, and then like, later he's doing it to walls and doors. And he's really going nuts with this thing because now it's become like a laser cutting torch, but it's water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could happen.
That could not happen.
He goes and finds the Joes in this base very quickly, lets them out of their cell, and then robots immediately attack them, but they're able to defeat the robots, so no big deal. At this point, the storm is happening pretty bad, and the base starts going down. You know, this submergible Cobra base is going to start sinking because the storm is going to take everybody out. So they say, let's get to our boat, which is still on top of the Cobra submergible, and let's use our radio to radio for help. Now, why they weren't radioing for help initially, I don't know.
Well, because their radio is down and they don't. I mean, you can't just turn on a radio and be like, help, and G.I. Joe will be like, got it. On our secure channel that we, you know, listen to every friggin' radio in the world.
I feel like that would work. I don't know. Maybe I've been watching too many of these.
You have. Because
fair enough.
Two is too many.
Fair enough. So, okay. So it starts going down that you're going to check the radio. Iron Claw is screaming. It's just at this point screaming at Rampage. What the F are you doing?
No.
Submerge the boat. You're going to go down. You're going to freaking die out here. I mean, all I wanted you to do was destroy it. You've already done that. I probably want you around for other missions. You are literally in a position where you're going to kill yourself. You're going to lose everything that you had.
Also, his job was to destroy all of the platforms. He got one. All of the platforms have to go for this plan to work. So he's still got much work to do.
Oh, he's got other platforms. That's right. Yeah, okay. But you can understand the Iron Claw's frustration at this point.
100%.
He's trying to tell him to move on like three times, and the dude's just like, hold on one more minute. This is a little bit like trying to get a 3-year-old out the door to go anywhere.
Almost like you had to do something like that today as well.
Why don't you not worry about that, Chan? I had to make sure things happen in time to watch The Price is Right. This story comes together as all the pieces fall into place. The storm is hitting real. This is what's kind of funny is Rampage is like, no. I got to get every drop of this. It's going to go to 100 times its value, which doesn't make sense because the whole point is that it's supposed to be destroyed. So it will go up 100 times the value. So
right. Well,
Rampage is not a money genius.
That's kind of why I liked it, because, again, old D-Care would just be like, I got to get every drop of this precious oil and just be an end to it there, that like oil is like gold. I started to feel like it was going that way, but he clarifies that he understands that the only way this goes up is if he destroys all the other stuff. He just wants to get it all, you know, for himself. And, you know, so he keeps pushing it. So I get what you're doing, man.
It's great. He's villainous. This makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
But what made me laugh though, is he's shouting at Iron Claw, like, no, I'm not going to do it. Roughly 10 seconds later, the storm rocks his vessel so hard. He's like, yo, we got to submerge right now. Out.
Let's go.
It's like it all of a sudden gets real quick for him when that storm cracks his boat,
yep.
which made me laugh in the moment. However, through all of this, and I didn't quite understand what was happening, but through all of this, he lost the CPU, which controlled his vessel, which controls the robots, which controls the explosives. Mm-hmm. Some sort of weird MacGuffin CPU enters the conversation,
and that's
he loses it.
Like I said, the bones of it, it's it makes sense that like there's a, you know, something that will disable all of this stuff. The fact that it's a very strangely brightly colored shaped MacGuffin that is just like sitting out. Like the CPU of your computer isn't just sitting on top of your computer that you just like, pop it right out and then the whole thing shuts down. And so I'm I see what the structure of this story is, but also it's real damn silly that it looks like a boppet and we're trying to run it outside and run around with it instead of, I don't know, fucking stepping on it. How about that?
Yeah.
How about turn your friggin' cannon on it? Your water laser plasma rifle juice machine.
Rifle juice machine.
For it. I will buy this product. I thank you for coming on Shark Tank.
It was mostly confusing to me because Shark Tank?
Like that was my show that I was like, I really gotta get my name into it somehow. Whoa. But like,
no, but I wish I had. All right, it's called Shark Tank. We don't understand that, sir. Oh, right. See, that's part of my name. Okay, there's already a show called Shark Tank, sir, and I feel like this will just be very confusing to everyone. Yeah,
but is it Shark Chank? Because that is a different name. I think we can all concede this is a different name.
It turns out that Chan has been pitching his Shark Chank show on Shark Tank, and then the Shark Tankers decide to invest in his show.
Oh boy, this is some Inception shit right here.
I'm just waiting for somebody to keep doing the Shark Chank tongue twister until they screw it up.
No,
I pull a race card on you. Just know, I'm waiting.
Nope.
I do want
like a vulture.
Where's one of our Photoshoppers out there to give us a Shark Chank, Chiron? That's what I want. No, I would say the thing that confused me is the fact this CPU has never been referenced up to this point. If we're going to set this up in the third act as being an important item, I'd like to have at least been talked about briefly, you know, or visually shown in the foreground at some point to give me a hint that this was a thing that might happen.
I feel like it's a thing we've seen in a G.I. Joe episode fairly recently that, like, we're yoinking some sort of CPU type situation and all of Scar's equipment shutting down as a result of it. So this is now a trope that kind of like you kill the head alien and all the other invading aliens just keel over and die. Cause that's how things work in the real world.
The CPU is roughly the size of like a beach ball, which I think is a little bit strange. My understanding is they're little cards actually the size of a beach ball.
This is 1995 because of Moore's law. They're roughly the size of an engine block, weigh about as much. And they're multicolored like you would expect.
Harpoon runs away with the CPU. Rampage chases him, going his full Hulk at this point. He's like, yo, I got to bring the other guy, which I thought was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And so they now have Chan. You can describe it. This is our silent montage, only music, no other sounds fight that lasts a little while between Rampage and Harpoon. Can we hear a little bit of this fight?
It's just that.
Take my word for it. They're fighting.
They're running around and doing all sorts of stuff. As a concept, it works. Like, I think that's cool that they have a montage, but like the music is just so generic.
You just hate that 90s rockin' music.
He hates the 90s. I love the 90s music.
I'm a metal guy, so this feels like an attack on me, a personal slight. The whole thing where like it doesn't really make sense that the CPU it ends with him just like it falls in the water and like, well, okay, we're done now.
It just fall in the water.
If
he intentionally
took. Why
he
did
intentionally
do that?
Throws it overboard.
Yeah, which
to what you said, he could have just done at any point. But of course, he drops the CPU overboard. So Rampage is like, F you. And he drops Harpoon overboard, which I thought was fun. Then he makes his own save. And all the other Joes were like on a lower level. That's why they weren't helping him. So Rampage ends up getting himself out through this like escape pod. Of course he does. And that's fine. But everything else is going down. and every other part of this is happening. What was really kind of bizarre to me is he basically says there is no way to get off this boat. This whole thing is sinking into the ocean. There's a tropical storm happening. Y'all are fucked. Yep. And so they're just like, oh crap. Rampage gets himself out in the only escape pod. And then we just cut to them on an inflatable raft in the ocean fishing. Yeah. Like they didn't, we don't even see them find it. We don't see them reference where they know to get one. They just do.
Yeah.
That's real Toon Force right there. That's what I'm trying to say.
I always wanted to create a show where there was like a cliffhanger at the end of every episode, and then just like the next episode they come back and like, whoo, thank goodness we made it out of that alive.
You know what, that's I thought an it was old hilarious story. That's and an I'm old story in a writing class that I heard, Chan, was that there was a show that was about to get canceled, and it was like an old-timey like radio show back in the day with like your cowboy Lone Ranger type protagonist. And at the end of the last episode, when they were about to get canceled, the writer had him break his leg and fall into a well. And then all the people were like, well, what happened to him? He's like, well, you have to buy the next season to find out. So they buy the next season. And this might be completely apocryphal, don't get me wrong. But they buy the next season because they're just like, look, we just have to know. This is too much. And then the beginning of the next season is him sitting at a dining table saying, thank God I got out of that well. Dude, I'm sorry I cut you off, but I love that story. So
no, just like I thought that was real clever of me that we would do something like that, and I'm realizing now it was not clever at all. They have been doing that forever. They just have no scruples or morals, and they're just like, you know what, whatever, I don't gotta explain shit to you.
That's it,
sir, that's your job. Like, I don't wanna.
Is it though? Bet I don't.
Apparently not. Like, when did fucking Samuel Beckett ever explain shit? He didn't. Ergo, case closed.
There it is.
Samuel Beckett is the writer of such plays as Waiting for Godot.
I am aware. He also jumped through time with his friend Dean Stockwell.
No.
And then he was able to jump from body to body throughout time, writing rights that once went wrong before finally his last leap would be the leap home.
No.
It's really wild that he found time to do all that writing in between all that leaping bodies.
Make it stop, Gina. Yeah.
In a quantum way.
What is happening here?
We also find out that Black Dragon hates sushi, which I don't understand this. It's already bad enough they made the only ninja a white dude, but they also made him a white dude who hates sushi. And
established that you hate sushi.
I love sushi. It's one of my favorite things to eat. What are you talking about,
Gina?
You
literally were like, ew, raw fish, disgusting. You clearly have no idea. Are you under the impression that the rice under the fish is what the sushi is?
First off,
talking about how you like white rice, Ray?
You don't order a white rice sushi, Gina? I get a white rice roll every time I go to the sushi place. It's delicious.
You're like, oh, I'll have this, but none of the fish on the top? Gosh, this white rice is expensive.
Yeah, it's rough. You know, and honestly, that soy sauce gets a little spicy for me. I'm not going to lie. I think it's weird that character hates sushi, a food that I love, Gina.
I think it's weird that you don't understand that sushi is fish taken from the ocean and then carved up.
Like I understand what sushi is.
Clearly you don't.
But I don't trust Harpoon to give it to me raw off the edge of a boat.
Again, that's you keep saying raw, and it makes me think you don't understand what sushi is.
If he fried up that fish, I might have a chance.
Again, you have no idea what sushi is.
I think you don't know what a Philadelphia roll is.
I love Philadelphia rolls. You put cream cheese in my sushi. I order two rolls every time I get it because it's the best.
I think you have never actually had real sushi. I'm going to go out on a limb and say,
how dare you? We order from the
same
sushi place, Gina Ippolito.
It's called Burger King. And when they give it to us, the sushi is called Filet-O-Fish.
Gina, you're mixing all your metaphors now, and I'm very upset with you.
Yeah, I mean, really, that is talking about McDonald's food items in a Burger King context.
When Filet-O-Fish was getting really big and Burger King's big turn back in the 90s, or maybe it was the late 80s.
McDonald's.
Yes, I know this, Gina, not Burger King.
Did I say Burger King?
Yes, you did.
Burger King, though, tried to put out their fish sandwich and they tried to call it the Whaler. Do you guys remember this?
Yes.
And then people were like, whales are mammals. We don't want to fucking eat whales. Why would you call it the whaler? I know clearly, you're trying to imply it's large, but that's really upsetting Burger King.
No, it's the whaler. So it's the person who kills the whales who is being eaten. So that's okay then.
I would have been okay with it then somehow.
We're whalers on the moon. We carry a harpoon.
Yes, we do. I just having a flashback of the whaler and even my young, very young brain when I first saw that commercial was like, that's not a good idea at all. As I was dropping C's in my high school class or before. At the end of all this, they're on the raft. They end up getting saved. And Harpoon, kind of a funny bit, he's like, actually, can you not save us until after I'm done fishing? I have to catch this big fish. And that was kind of fun. I thought that was fun. The other two are like, get me the fuck out of here. This has been the worst. I'm so sad I lost that bet. I got to talk to Freight about lifting tanks when we get back. That was a fun
bit. More importantly, I got to start putting black and Cajun fish under things.
I need to move. So I just put black and Cajun fish under every box in my house. Yeah. Invited over Freight. That might work. Now, our PSA is another replay, by the way.
We have seen this 800 times. Mm-hmm. And I'm actively mad about it. And, were there just child snatches going on all the time? And they were like,
Gina,
look,
please, let's not talk about child snatches again.
Oh, yeah, Gina, that's not appropriate.
The first time that we had the FBI show up at our doorstep, it was real uncomfortable. And if they have to come back again, I don't think we're...
We are three grown adults who just want to talk about child snatches on a cartoon podcast.
No, we do not.
No,
none of us
not
do.
Not a part of this.
That is not a thing. That is not a thing that these men on the show want.
And when you make the spreadsheet of every episode, make sure you title it Child Snatch PSA.
This is all very upsetting. But this PSA, it's the Home Alone. You won a prize. Oh, I'm scary.
I hate it.
It's just, I'm over it at this point.
It's like the eighth time we've seen it.
Ugh.
In seven episodes, we've seen it eight times.
No, because it was played twice. The original show, too.
Okay,
was literally an episode that had two PSAs, so that math, you were joking, but it does kind of check out.
You know what?
Here's the thing. This is, in this series, this is the third time we've seen it. In seven episodes, this is the third time we've seen
it. Yeah, that's absurd.
So here's the question that I'm going to pose, because also in three of seven episodes, Gina, Mayday has injured her leg in some way, because she wasn't even in this episode, so she wasn't able to. That equals the number of times we've seen this PSA. At the end of season one of G.I. Joe Extreme.
What are we going to see more?
Which one will happen more? Will it be Mayday injures her leg more?
Oh.
Will it be this PSA more?
No, I'll tell you what's been going on is the voice on the other end of that phone is Mayday.
Oh.
He's been snatching kids. Uh-huh. But there have been a couple of resourceful kids who like stomped on her toe and kicked her in the knee. So she's the one that's been stealing kids. That's why we have to see this PSA so much, because they're like, gosh, she's really good at this G.I. Joe thing, but she just cannot stop snatching kids.
That is upsetting.
So that's why they've shown it this much. And then in the next episode, her leg is fucked up because the next kid she calls doesn't have a Joe there to protect them. So she goes to their house, kicks in their door, snatches the kid. The kid's kicking. He grazes her kneecap. And then the next episode, they're like, God damn it. Did you steal another kid? And she's like, yeah, I did. Like,
I don't want to talk about it.
Well, this explains why they're on their toes so much to prevent child kidnappings. If they know the calls are coming from inside the house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all this season of G.I. Joe, they're all about something the Joes have themselves done.
Oh boy. Oh boy, that's rough. That's, you know what? Levels and layers. That's what I like to see in my cartoon programming.
Yeah.
And that's our show. That is G.I. Joe Extreme Episode 7, Dawn's Oily Light. We never did find out who Dawn is.
No. No.
Very upsetting. No. I was really hoping to get some clarity on that, but I did not.
I hate it.
Unfortunately.
Clarity is go to hell, right?
And you can have all kinds of stuff you can do. You can go to patreon.com/knowingisatthepodcast. If you join us for like $5, you could join us when we do The Champ of TV Wrestling, a Which Way book written by the Seagulls, who wrote some G.I. Joe books. These two people know nothing about wrestling, and they wrote a wrestling choose your own adventure book. We're going to try to do a crossover. Knowing Is Half the Podcast meets AE Doubleback, like we've never met them before. And we're going to have everybody together. We're going to invite all the patrons of this show on that show. And we're all going to have some fun. It was a real blast to do it. You heard it a couple of weeks ago when we redid Operation Star Raider with some of our patrons. And that was a lot of fun. We're going to have that coming up pretty soon. So check Facebook, check Twitter at G.I. Joe Podcast, and check the Patreon feed if you would like to be a part of that. Come join us on Patreon and have some fun. You can check us out on Facebook.com/KnowingIsAtThePodcast. Obviously, it's at Patreon.com/KnowingIsAtThePodcast. And you can check us out on Twitter. We are at G.I. Joe Podcast again, but individually, I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And I just wish we could find out who Dawn is. Maybe it's a two-parter. Maybe she'll be in the next episode, and this will all...
Situation critical.
Roll call!
Ballistic! Harpoon!
Mayday!
Blast Dragon!
Thunder Savage!
Greek Sight!
Metalhead!
Right!
Lieutenant Stone!
The odds are 1,000,000 to 1.
And that's the way we like it!
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.